Good afternoon. Like you said, my name is Ashley Tesnow. I'm a PhD candidate at Texas A&M in Greg Swords' lab. And today I'm going to be talking about a big component of my research on the population genomic insights into fall armyworm integrated pest management. So the fall armyworm is a highly mobile, highly polyphagous pest endemic to the New World. It's known to feed on over 80 different host plants. And one of the reasons that it's so successful as a pest is due to its high mobility. So they're estimated to travel about 480 kilometers per generation, with a single moth reportedly traveling 1,600 kilometers in a generation. So they're highly mobile. When you have an infested field, the offspring of that field can travel across an entire state or into other states, making them really difficult to control. Although they are endemic to the Western Hemisphere, they've received a lot of media attention recently due to their introduction into Africa in 2016, and then subsequent spread across India, China, and now they're across all of Southeast Asia, and that's in just a 3 to 4 year period. But today we're going to be focusing on populations that are a bit closer to home. So in the United States, there's two geographically distinct populations of fall armyworms that can be differentiated based on their overwintering site. So this pest does not undergo diapause, and therefore they're only able to overwinter in locations where it's warm enough year-round for them to survive and reproduce. And so in the United States, this only occurs in the southern tip of Florida and the southern tip of Texas. However, in the spring, when temperatures begin to rise, the insects then disperse northward and in stepwise northward expansion, making their way all the way up into Canada by the end of the year. Although they can travel all the way up north by the end of the year, there's no evidence of a return migration, so these two populations remain genetically distinct year-round. To add to the complexity, within fall armyworms, there's two morphologically identical but genetically distinct host-associated strains. These were initially described by Pashley 1986 and named for the host plant on which they were described. So the C strain, or the corn strain, is primarily found on corn, sorghum, and occasionally cotton plants, whereas the R strain, or the rice strain, is more common on smaller grasses, rice, millet, pasture grasses, and alfalfa. And one thing that's really important to note is that although these two strains are from the same species, they are inherently different agricultural pests. They respond differently to insecticides, and they show preferences for different host plants. That said, they are known to hybridize along their migratory route, or at least in these laboratory assays that have been previously conducted. And a lot of those, all of those hybridization assays have been conducted in laboratory. There's not a lot known about their hybridization patterns in the field. The reason being is because the diagnostic assays that are used to differentiate these two host strains rely on mitochondrial DNA, which is maternally inherited, and therefore it is not capable of detecting hybridization. So it's really important that we develop new current strain diagnostic assays that are capable of detecting hybrids between these two host strains. So that brings me to the objectives of my research. So we had two objectives. The first was to resolve the population structure of fall armyworms and identify patterns of host strain hybridization in the central U.S. flyway. So these are individuals that overwinter at that South Texas location. And then the second objective was to develop new diagnostic tools to differentiate between our host strains and also those hybrids that occur. So to do this, we set up pheromone-baited moth traps at 5 locations across the central U.S. flyway. Once again, these are collecting moths that overwinter at that South Texas overwintering site. And then we collected moths at different time points throughout the year that corresponded with times when these moths were present at each of these different locations. Before I move forward, I just want to mention that all the data that I'm presenting today comes from a single year. So these are samples collected in 2017. We do have data from those collected in 2018, but we haven't analyzed that yet. And then what we did is we took all of the moths that we collected, extracted total DNA, and then determine the host strain haplotype using that known mitochondrial marker within the DNA. This diagnostic assay relies on a restriction fragment length polymorphism, so once again, it cannot detect hybrids between the C and the R strain individuals. We then used ddRadseq, where we digested our DNA with two restriction enzymes, size-selected for 300 base pair fragments, and then sequenced the ends of those fragments, aligned all of our reads to the published genome, and then called SNPs using a docent pipeline. All the data I'm going to present today is analyzed using a principal component analysis in R. In total, we identified 2015 biallelic SNPs that has 0% missing data, so they're present in all of the individuals that we sequenced at a minimum of 3x coverage. Before I move on to the results, I just want to go over the hypotheses that we had. So the first hypothesis is that using those high-resolution SNP markers, we'd be able to detect genetic differentiation between those two host strains, so the C strain and the R strain. If this is the case, then we would expect two distinct clusters on our principal component analysis, as you can see here. And those would roughly correspond with the mitochondrial haplotypes that were predetermined. Our second hypothesis is that hybridization occurs between these two strains. If this is the case, then we'd expect some individuals to fall out in between those two SNP clusters, indicating that they're hybrids between those two SNP clusters. And we might also expect some individuals to have a mismatch between the SNP cluster where they're located and the mitochondrial haplotype that was determined. And then our last hypothesis is that this hybridization is unidirectional. So R strain females are capable of mating with C strain males, but C strain females can't mate with R strain males. If this is the case, then we'd expect all of our hybrids to have the same mitochondrial haplotype, indicating the maternal lineage of that individual is the same. So moving on to the results, what we found is that in South Texas, we actually had three distinct populations within our principal component analysis. Our first principal component, which made up 7.5% of our variation, neatly separated out our R strain haplotypes and our C strain haplotypes. So this indicates that we could detect that genetic differentiation between our two host strains. But within the C strain, our second principal component, which made up 2.2% of our variation, neatly separated out two unique subpopulations within our C strain individuals. When we looked at the data collected, or all the samples collected north of the overwintering site, what we found is that they clustered with just two of those populations. So with the R strain and one of the C strain subpopulations. So this led us to the hypothesis that within our C strain individuals, we have one population that stays resident in South Texas all year round, and one population that's actually dispersing northward and colonizing north of the overwintering site. Additionally, we were interested in those patterns of hybridization, and so what we found is that there were 19 individuals that had an R strain haplotype, but were present in our C strain cluster. But we didn't have any individuals that had the C strain haplotype in the R strain cluster. So once again, this indicates that the maternally inherited mitochondrial DNA is being transferred from the R strain over to the C strain in a unidirectional hybridization. But, well, like I mentioned before, when we looked at that initial principal component analysis just at the overwintering site, we didn't see any hybrids at that overwintering site. So I was further interested in looking at the geographic distribution of our hybrids. And what we found is that as we increased with latitude, we had a proportional increase in the number of hybridization events that were occurring. And this was interesting because there's not a lot known about these hybrid individuals. It's thought that they have different host distribution than either of the C or the R parental strain. And they might not be as big of a pest because there's some evidence that the females are behaviorally sterile, so they're not producing offspring compared to either of the pure strain individuals. And as a result, we might need to adjust our management plans geographically in order to account for these higher proportions of hybrids that exist. So moving on to our second objective. The second objective was to develop new diagnostic assays that were capable of differentiating between our C strain, our R strain, and those hybrid individuals. So to do this, we identified diagnostic SNPs that could differentiate C and R. I mapped them back to the genome, extracted a 400 base pair fragment that contained those SNPs, and then developed TACMAN primer and probe sequences. Essentially what TACMAN is it's a real-time PCR assay where you introduce two fluorescently labeled probes into your PCR reaction. Each probe binds to a different variant of a SNP, and so based on the fluorescent signal that you receive, you can determine which allele is present in that reaction or in that DNA sequence. And as a proof of concept, we analyzed 30 pure strain individuals, 30 R, 30 C strain, and what we found is that using one SNP marker, we got perfect discrimination between our C strain individuals and our R strain individuals. So all the individuals that were rice strain had allele 1, or the blue allele in this graph, and all the individuals that were C strain had allele 2, or the orange allele in this graph. But our question really was, is this assay capable of detecting hybrid heterozygotes, or those individuals that are hybrids between the C and the R strain? So to do this, we ran this assay using 5 R-strain individuals, 5 C-strain individuals, and then 7 putative hybrids. So these were individuals that fell out between those two SNP clusters or that had a mismatch between their R-strain or between their mitochondrial haplotype and their nuclear DNA cluster. And what we found is that, once again, all the individuals that were rice strain had that allele 1. All the individuals that were of the C strain were assigned allele 2, but the individuals that fell out in between those two SNP clusters were assigned to both alleles. So that means that they were heterozygote at that locus. And this was really interesting because it indicated that our assay was capable of detecting recent hybridization events, or the individuals that have one allele from one parent and the other allele from the other parent. So moving on to go just over a review of what I've talked about so far. Within the fall armyworm populations, we found that we might have migratory and resident populations that occur in South Texas. And this is important because it could lead to future studies on the genetic basis of migration, or why do some individuals disperse while others stay in that that overwintering site. Additionally, we saw a few new patterns of host strain hybridization. We were able to confirm that there's unidirectional mating incompatibility along the central U.S. flyway, and that hybridization may increase with latitude, which may mean that we need to adjust our management plans geographically in order to account for this increase in hybrid populations. Additionally, we developed a new diagnostic assay that's capable of hybrid detection. But like I mentioned previously, all of the data that we've looked at so far was collected in that central U.S. flyway. So we're working on validating that in the Florida flyway to see if those same assays can be applied to the eastern U.S. So with that, I'd like to thank all of my collaborators, everyone who sent me samples, and I would be happy to take any questions. Yeah, so that was something, it was initially developed in the lab where they were indicating, there were some labs that were like, there's this mating incompatibility, and then there are other labs that are like, we can mate them both directions, so we don't know what's going on. Most labs now accept that there is a mating incompatibility in the lab, but this was the first time we've ever confirmed that in the field.